This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele. Is brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back to Beyond Mentorship. Nimrod Mbele here. Before we took that break, I did promise that we'll be joined by Professor John Piddley, John Foster Piddley, who is the Dean and Director of Henley Business School. The purpose of our conversation with a good prof here, who is a very good individual that I've known for some time, is to really reflect on the corporate governance conference which was held at the Henley Business School under the theme implications of the National State Enterprises Bill. And prof obviously was a guest at the conference, and he got some observation. Prof, without any waste of time, let me take this opportunity to welcome you.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here, Nimrod.
Great. Thank you very much, Prof. As I've indicated earlier, we had an opportunity to, you know, Knowledge Anchors Group had an opportunity to partner with Henley Business School to host an annual corporate governance on the implication of the National State Enterprise Bill. From where you're sitting, are you able to share your overall experience with the listeners of the show?
Yeah, thanks, Nimrod. I think it was a very important session, actually, with the State Enterprise Bill coming out. And it really looked at it from a number of points of view. And we started off with a really excellent talk, I thought, from Martin Kingston, who's driving business for South Africa at the moment. And it's extremely experienced in governance on multiple state-operated enterprises, including having unbundled them, rebundled them, put them in business rescue and whatever, many, many things. So he's a person who's probably got one of the broadest experience and understanding. And he just come back from Malaysia, where he was looking at another place where he was looking at the way they run their state-operated enterprises. And he was able to really describe how they worked in those circumstances. And what was very clear from that was that the models we work with are very different from the models that different countries work in terms of the independence of the state-operated enterprises and also their ability in certain cases to work really very much as almost as market entities, paying dividends, being held to the same sort of level of accountability and ethical practice and governance as private enterprises or listed enterprises. And it was a very attractive proposition in a sense. And then we had a lot of different interpretations of how the new bill would, whether it would work or not, actually, to give people sufficient independence from government other people who might want to influence them. And I think we had a lot of very separate opinions. So it was quite a lively session altogether. And I found that you were able to bring together people who would give you a political view, give you a social view, give you almost a polemic or an ideological view. But I think underlying it all was this very clear thought was, how can you really make state-operated enterprises work unless you are free from political interference for ideological reasons, which may or may not be, not for ideological reasons, let's say for party reasons, to support the ruling party, whoever that may be. And also to make sure that they fulfill the dual mandate of national interests and being commercially viable. And so the conversation, I think, left a lot of questions, really, whether the new legislation would give organizations a sufficient independence to really run and drive themselves in the public interest. Very, very good meeting altogether, I would say.
No, thank you very much for that observations and insight that you're sharing with us based on your take on the conference. And obviously, you've acknowledged that, you know, typically a conference of this nature brings, business associations, brings unions, brings government officials, you know, brings people from a wide range of ideological spectrum. To what extent do you think there's some level of convergence in terms of where the state-owned enterprises are heading? I'm asking this question purely because we all know that the bill is likely to become and it's likely to be enacted as law. From where you're sitting, is the cup half full or half empty? in terms of the bill, really pushing the strategic position of the country moving forward? Or is there a lot of work that needs to happen?
Again, you're going to get different answers from different perspectives. I can give you my best interpretation of what I heard and what I would personally consider. The state-operated enterprises obviously got, as I said, the dual mandates. You have to think in terms of national and strategic interests and also commercial mandates. Often they don't work together. How can you maintain profitability if you've been forced to spend money on things that are hard to make viable? And there's also differentiation between those state-operated enterprises, which are really strategically essential for infrastructure and have a major effect on the economy. And obviously Transnet and Eskom are part of that. And the ones where other people would say are not so strategically important, like SAA, for example, Transnet, Prasa, Sanrail, AXA would fit in the first category. And in the second category, and this I think this is what Martin Kingston said, Danel, CEF, Centec, SAA might not be so systemically important. The economy, you could argue, could run reasonably well without them or with alternatives, whereas Transnet, Prasa, Sanrail, and AXA are basically hugely important infrastructure companies or organizations that are essential for our economic good running and can't be interfered with. So I think there was very much a split division here. At the end of the day, they will all be bundled under one organization, which will really have as the CEO the president. And without naming presidents' names or trying to allocate any particular, interpretation of what President Ramaphosa or other presidents would do, there was a very real challenge that if you get a good president, or when I say good, somebody who's working well in the national interest, building up the economy for future generations and making sure that we're using money really very, very well, and corruption is very much limited, etc. And party politics aren't, people aren't being stuffed into organizations just to support the party. If you get a good president like that, then it can work well. If you get a president who's got a very different mandate, with the amount of power vested in the presidency with this new bill, you could see that the whole thing could turn upside down and go in a very, very different direction. And we could go through, we could get our state capture scenarios, arguably, people would argue with this, reasonably easy. So one big challenge is it's too much power being invested in a president, for example. And I very quickly hasten, this isn't pointing fingers at any particular president, it's just the principle of power allocation. And I think that is a very big worry and something that has to be thought. When you look at, I remember Martin saying that in Singapore, there's a company called, a holding company called Temasek, the holding company from the SOEs, pays dividends to the Ministry of Finance. And these are put into a sovereign wealth fund, which is used to develop the nation. And this is very different from the model we're doing here. And those organizations will pay dividends and will have the sort of commercial balance that you would expect. Go ahead.
No, proceed, Prof.
I think you've really got to be able to delineate the role of the state and of the private sector very clearly. We've not really found a way to build partnerships between business and governance that just really worked. And now we have the government of national unity. Our capacity to collaborate becomes an absolute superpower. And that collaboration has to be along parameters that we've decided are in the national interest when you're dealing with a high degree of complexity of different partners. So you need an enormous amount of discipline, an enormous amount of purpose to make this work. And my argument is, I would say that we're facing a juncture in South Africa now where our own individual capacities to determine the direction of South Africa have more power than ever before, where we as business need to be more activists. And when I say activists, I mean taking a very strong position against corruption and for national interest, being involved in education and in engaging in governance activities which hold the government and business to account equally, and that you can't cast one as evil and the other as great. We're all accountable in this. And I think we're facing that really important change in South Africa where our individual consciences and the the determination to make South Africa work requires us to look at new solutions and to really step up to, even though you don't think you want to, step up to stand for a South Africa that's going to be more prosperous in the next 10 or 20 years than it has been in the last, and to avoid the damages and challenges we've had in the past, particularly over the past few years.
I couldn't agree with him, Prof. I mean, it's certainly, you're raising pertinent points that Martin Kingston raised, that Bonang Mahale raised, and several high-profile officials who participated at the conference. Obviously, the issue of a dual mandate of state enterprises, it's quite a thorny one, because we all know that most SOEs, in fact, all of them, carry dual mandates. At one point, they have to be socially relevant and promoting social and economic, improvement program, but as well as a business imperative. So that's one big issue that obviously I agree with you that needs to be activated. And you also raised the issues of the independence of the board. So that's another big question. There's another issue that you've raised with regards to the powers accorded to the president as the shareholder, as a representative of the shareholder. So these are very interesting highlights that you have shared with us, which are quite useful. So where to from now, Prof, in terms of getting, and obviously we will have regulations beyond the Act, which will strengthen the kind of SOE landscape that you want to see happening?
Well, I think, as a point I made, and it's obviously very controversial, is that we talk about the dual mandate of SOEs, which is a mandate between its national interest purpose, if you like, you know, strategic resources and building the country, and its commercial purpose, which implies a profitability and being profit-driven. And those two, in many ways, are kind of contradictory. But are ways, I'm sure there are ways that we can find ways around that by looking at other countries. We also, to be honest, there's two other mandates that might be at, or if not mandates, and very strong influences that affect them. One is the influence of the ruling party, whoever that may be. And I hope with the GMU now, we can get to a point where the balance of interest is in the national interest rather than the interest of one particular party or another. And the second one is criminal interests, which we have seen, and that people don't like to look at this and will deny it, that we've seen massive criminal interests affecting state-operated enterprises. And we have to come to terms that these forces are at play, and no society or anything is perfect. And we have to understand that these forces are at play, and then we have to find ways to make the power of these state-operated enterprises work in the national interest, not in the interests of party criminality, or also an overpowering profit motive, where we're, you know, arguably become profiteering and sucking money out of people to make these things work without contributing to national interest. So we're stuck at a very difficult decision matrix now.
Yep.
What I would suggest we do is we really look at what we want for this country. How do we want our country to look in 10, 20, 30 years' time? How do we want it to look for our children? How do we get access to prosperity for all the people in South Africa as well as we can when so many are being excluded and lacking in education? How do we get these state-operated enterprises working to build the economy in ways that are sustainable and reinforceable, that you know, doesn't suck, that they actually build their capability and strengths progressively without having a fantastical idea of human nature, which, as we know, is flawed? And I think collectively we have to suck it in a bit and work together with people we might not particularly want to work together, drop any sense of perfectionism and just be pragmatic and work out how can we improve the situation 1%, 2%, 3%, you know, progressively over time, all the time holding in our mind this idea we want this to be a prosperous and fair South Africa where all those people who are excluded get opportunity to use their very capable brains and capabilities properly, and that will take time.
Yep.
And how do we make trade-offs between, you know, sucking profit out or whatever, and making these state-operated enterprises really have good governance and use money well for the national interest.
Thank you. Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave you, Prof. It has been absolutely beautiful for you sharing those beautiful insights from a conference that seems to have unpacked a number of challenges, but there seems to be a movement towards a common cause, particularly in the context of what the Government of National Unity is putting forward. So we're likely to see more collaboration, collaboration which promotes what is in the best interest of the nation as a whole. Thank you very much, Prophet. Thanks for your insights and commentary.